Good evening, everybody. Glad you could be here tonight. Slide that was up there said we're looking at Christian influence for several weeks. And we've had two classes so far. We had a little introduction to the subject. And last week we looked at living a salt life, which came from Matthew 5, just after the Beatitudes. And if you missed that, I have some of the little notes you can look at and the scriptures that were used. But the first thing we want to do is, you had a homework assignment. You were supposed to go out into the world and try and interface with people that you aren't necessarily familiar with, and try and just have even the smallest bit of contact and influence with them. And last week we shared some of the things that we did. So what did you try and do this week? Okay.
You want to repeat it?
He said he went to Cracker Barrel and
my sister.
He interacted with his sister, who he hadn't seen in 5 years, when he went to Cracker Barrel. Other things, anybody else did? You're going to have to talk loud.
Soup kitchen today.
Okay, soup kitchen. Okay, that's good. What else? This isn't hard stuff. You know, you really got to... When I emphasized in the first class, if you just sit here and you just do like we do a lot of times, and just sort of like a sponge and you absorb it, and it doesn't cause you to do anything, then that's a problem. And you're going to find out today that it's a problem in what we're going to study. So
I walked into the post office to ship a package, and for some reason what blurted out of my mouth was, "It's so nice to see the bright and shining postal employee that I wanted to see." And then she proceeded to tell me how she was attacked by a customer yesterday. So she was very happy.
Okay. That's sometimes you get a good reaction. Sometimes you catch other stuff, too. Okay. Anybody else interact with someone that they possibly didn't know? Or okay. That's good. This week, I made an effort to every person that I came in contact with that had a name tag on, I tried to make sure that during the dialogue that I had with them, I said their name. And I wasn't 100% successful. There was one or two times where I slipped back into the old habit, but by and large, tried to use everybody's name who I knew. You'd be surprised what kind of influence you can have on somebody with how different it is when somebody talks to you and they use your name. You know how much you like to hear somebody use your name, and other people are just like that as well. So we're going to have a different assignment. We've had this one for the last 2 weeks. I'm going to give you a different one tonight. So please, you know, try these things out. You know, stretch a little bit. They're not hard to do, especially if I can do them. I'm pretty sure anybody else in here can do them as well. Tonight, I'm going to turn this on back here. If you want to open your Bibles for just a second, let's open up to Matthew, the 5th chapter, which is where we've been. Where we were last week, we're just going to move down a couple of verses, starting in Matthew 5, and we're going to start in 14, we're going to look at 14, 15, and 16, where it says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, that it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." This is the essence of what the lesson's about tonight. Is last week we talked about being the salt of the earth, which are the verses just preceding these verses. And we talked about the way that God had constructed us physically, we couldn't survive without salt. We have to have salt in order to survive. And I guess I want to talk about light for just a second. If you happen to look in the King James translation, you'll find the word light appears in the Old and the New Testament approximately 230 times. Sometimes it's referring to light as the light that comes out of a light source. Sometimes it's talking about something being not heavy, but being light. But a significant proportion of those verses that are in there use light in a metaphorical kind of way, and that's kind of what we're looking at tonight. Just like salt to humans, humans also need light in order to live. I want you to think about it for a minute. Can you think of something in your body that wouldn't function without light?
Vitamin D.
Okay, we'll get to that one second, but there's another one. Just here's what I want you to do. Everybody close your eyes. Everybody close your eyes. If there's no light, your eyes don't work. You can't see. Imagine if there was no light. There would be no reason to have eyes, because you wouldn't be able to see anything. But let's go back to the vitamin D for just a minute. Vitamin D, your body gets one of two ways. You either ingest things that have vitamin D in it, or God, in his infinite wisdom, designed you in such a way that your body is able to produce vitamin D. And you go, well, why do I need vitamin D? Vitamin D, you know, I can't imagine why someone can't believe that there's a God, that there's a creator. Because when you just look at little simple things like this, you know, when your hypothalamus has to talk to your parathyroid has to say, hey, we don't have enough calcium in our body. So it sends a message to your thyroid to send out stimulating hormones that then cause your body to go into the process of making vitamin D. And it starts in your skin and it travels through your body and goes to your liver, through your kidneys, goes into your... And it starts to absorb calcium out of the things that you've eaten, and it's for your bones and for other functions in your body. So if you didn't have vitamin D, a whole bunch of things wouldn't function in your body. But God had the wisdom to know that when he put the system together, that if you're not getting enough here, there's a way of just walking outside into the sunlight and being out there for, you know, a period of an hour a day in the sunlight, and you'll get more than enough vitamin D that your body needs in order to function. Let's go back to, I get lost in these things, they're so long ago, 5th grade, 6th grade, 7th grade, biology class. Tell me what sunlight does with a plant. What's the process?
Photosynthesis.
It's a process by which, and this is yet another example of why I can't understand why people can't believe that there's a God when you understand how this whole system works. What do you need for photosynthesis? You need a couple things. You need sunlight. You need
air.
No.
Oxygen.
No.
CO2.
You need carbon dioxide. And you need
rain. Yeah.
Water.
Yeah.
And the plant takes the sunlight and has chlorophyll in the leaf. And it comes down, the chlorophyll starts the process of photosynthesis. First thing it does is it grabs the water. Water's made up of what? Two kinds of atoms, hydrogen, oxygen. Strips out the hydrogen atom, says, I'm going to keep that, and puts it in his pocket, and takes the two oxygen atoms that are left, and what does it do with them? It goes, spits them back out into the atmosphere. It's kind of convenient because you and I need the O2.
Uh-huh.
They take what we put out, and the plant puts out what we need. But it then takes that hydrogen atom and combines it with the carbon dioxide and creates a sugar, which makes up the food that the plant needs in order to exist. So when you look at that, it couldn't work without, photosynthesis doesn't work without the light. And that's something that God designed. It's really, really an interesting sort of thing. In our songbook, everybody grab a songbook for just a second. I'm going to have you turn to a specific song. But in our songbook, I went back and looked, and there's approximately 15 songs in the songbook that have something to do with light. And in almost all cases, it's talking about it in a metaphorical kind of way. But I want you to turn to 397. 397 is one of my favorite songs. And we don't sing it very much, but we do sing it occasionally. It's Let the Lower Lights Be Burning. And I always thought I understood what this song was about. I really did. You know, you sort of think about somebody out at sea, and there's a lighthouse, and until you actually, I mean, I almost had to have something hit me in the head to make it register. But what it's talking about here is, in today's world, if you go out into the ocean, most people go out there and they have a what? They have a GPS that tells you right where you are, you know, within about 3 feet. And when you need to find where you're going, you look at your GPS and you know that if you want to go in the Palm Beach Inlet or the Jupiter Inlet, you know what the location is because it has a GPS location. And you can just program it into your little device and it'll help you get to that place. Well, back years ago, they didn't have those. This song was written back in the 1800s, middle 1800s. And it's a story, it's a true story about a ship that was on Lake Erie. And there was a really bad storm. And the captain was trying to make the harbor at Cleveland. And there's a lighthouse there that marks where the harbor is. Well, back in 1850s, they didn't have GPS. So the way you would navigate was either by the stars or you would use these lighthouses, and once you fixed on the lighthouse, it would tell you you were in the right general area. But this song isn't really about the lighthouse. It's about the lower lights. So let the lower lights be burning. What those are is we still have them today. If you go to the Jupiter Inlet and you go out in the ocean at night, either side of the inlet has lights on it. And one way, if you don't have anything else to guide you, the lighthouse will bring you to the right general location. And then when you're trying to go into the inlet, Jupiter's a little crazy, it's got a little shoal there, but generally speaking, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to take the lighthouse and you're supposed to put it in right in the middle of where the two lower lights are. And if you follow that path, it'll take you right in to the harbor or into the inlet that you're going into. Well, in the case of this one in Cleveland, the lower lights had burned out. And the captain had to make a decision. He said, well, I think I'm in the right place. And he proceeded to drive the ship up onto the rocks, and most of the people that were on the ship were killed. And the guy who wrote this song heard a sermon about this, and that lesson was used. And he was the one who was leading the singing for that particular meeting. Not sure he was a member. I don't believe they were members of the church. But he was moved by that story, and out of that story came this song. And this song is about keeping the lower lights burning. And it's really a lesson in, if you think of it in these terms, the lighthouse represents God. And we keep our eyes on God, and he gets us in the right general direction. He gets us in the area where we need to be. And think of the lower lights as being you and me. We help God. He gets people in the right location. Our job is to get them safely into the harbor. You know, God doesn't come down here and intervene directly with individuals. He works through his word, and he depends on us to do things. We're those lower lights, and we're the lights that help those people make it safely into the harbor. And in my mind, that's kind of what that song is all about. Just an interesting side note. Okay, so let's talk about light for just a second. In the beginning of this verse, it says, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. We're not going to turn the lights off, but I put that there intentionally just to catch your attention. When you see a light, it usually attracts your attention. When it's either all by itself or kind of out of position, or it's something that you recognize. What I want to do is I want to look, let's talk about light for a second and talk about some of the characteristics of light. Obviously, these three verses is a metaphor about light. And so let's talk about light for just a second and talk about some of the characteristics of light that have some parallels to us as Christians. I'll give you a couple ideas, and then if you get some ideas, you can kick in as we go along. One of the characteristics of light is that it illuminates and it reveals. When you turn the lights on in a room, you can see everything that's in a room. If it's dark, it shows things that were hidden. Let's look at a couple of verses here. Ephesians 5. 13 and 14, where it says, but all things that are exposed are made manifest by light. Light will expose all sorts of things, illuminate, We as Christians, if we're going to be the light of the world, we have to be the kind of person that illuminates. That's one of those ways we can have an influence on other people, is we can help illuminate to them God's Word. We can help illuminate to them how you can comport and conduct yourself. It's funny what you run across when you put these lessons together. I ran across this little thing. It was a little question. He said, why would a blind man need to walk around in the dark with a lantern?
People could see him.
So people wouldn't, exactly, so that people could see him and he wouldn't be a stumbling block to other people. So in that idea of illuminating, you know, a lot of times what it illuminates are the dangers along the way, the things that you're going to get tripped up by. So it doesn't make sense in some cases that a man who's blind would have a light. But he has a light not for himself but for other people so that they don't stumble over him. Okay, another characteristic of light is that it banishes the darkness. When you turn the light on in a room, I mean, can you turn on the light in a room and half the room's dark and the other half's light? Mm-hmm. Once you turn the light on, it makes the darkness go away. Now, it may not be as bright as you want it to be, but once you turn on the light, you can see most of the things that are in the room. And it's interesting, in Genesis 1, if you start looking at it, you don't have to go but three verses before you get to the point where God knew how important light was. It was one of the first things that he created. There was darkness over the face of the deep. And what did he do? He created light. And he divided it into day and to night. And that was the end of the first day. So that was one of the very first things that he did when he created things, is he created the light, because he knew that we would need it in order to be able to function. Another characteristic of light is it warms, and it comforts, and it cheers. Today's a good example. If you were at home today, it was all gloomy and dark and gray and raining, and you sort of feel kind of meh. But what happens when the sunshine comes out and things are bright? Does it change your attitude a little bit? Absolutely. You know, in Ecclesiastes 7 and 11, it says, "Wisdom is good with an inheritance and profitable to those who see the sun." It will change how you feel. And as a Christian, if we're going to be the light of the world, one of the things that we have to do is we have to be that influence that helps make changes in people, changes their attitudes, changes their approach, provides comfort, warmth, all those things. Another characteristic of light is it guides. I thought of two examples, one from the Old Testament and one from the New Testament, that are good illustrations of light that was used to guide people. Can you think?
Pillar of fire.
Very good. The pillar of fire. In Exodus 13. We read about there was a pillar of cloud that went before Israel as they traveled in the wilderness, and then there was a pillar of fire that guided them at night. So God provided them shade during the day and provided them light at night. Can you think of one from the New Testament? Which one?
The wise men were guided by a light.
Very good. Bingo. In Matthew chapter 2, you read about the wise men coming from the east. What caught their attention? They didn't get an email. There was a star they saw that guided them to where Christ was. So God has provided, you know, these examples for us of this idea that light can be a source that guides us or leads us. And thus, we as Christians need to be that kind of person. We need to help guide and lead other people to where they need to be. How about a characteristic of light about it warns you of danger? Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Beacon of hope. Let's talk about danger now. Think of, Think of an example in our everyday life when something flashes, fireman. Or I'll even do this for you. Here you go. We'll see how many old military people we have in the room. SOS. That's the international signal for I'm in trouble. But when if you think about when you drive around, as a matter of fact, I think we've actually gotten pretty carried away. When you drive, it used to be you drive down the street, and if you saw an emergency vehicle with a flashing light, it really grabbed your attention. But now you drive down the street, and every maintenance vehicle for the city or the county you live has flashing lights on it. Every time there's a pothole in the road, somebody's put up Bob's barricade thing, and it's flashing. And pretty soon, all of a sudden, we've become desensitized to all these flashing lights. But a flashing light catches your attention, and it's a warning sign. And light is what you would use when you're trying to warn somebody. Hey, don't come here. Don't do this. Let's look at a couple of examples. Here's one from 1 John 2. And let's see. John 2 and 17 or 15 through 17, where it says, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but of the world. And the world is passing away in the lust of it, and he who does the will of God abides forever." Who's going to bring that message? Who's going to be the shining beacon that delivers that message to the world?
We do.
It's not going to crawl out of this book all by itself. It's dependent upon you and me and Christians to have an influence on other people and deliver that kind of thing. If you think about it, you can pick any particular topic, you know, something like denominationalism. There's a whole bunch of people who are going to be surprised on the Day of Judgment. You know, they go to church and they do their thing, and they're going to find out pretty quick. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 10, it says, "And now I plead with you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing, that there be no divisions among you, that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment." And you can go on, and there's all kinds of verses about one Lord, one faith, one baptism. There's all kinds of cajoling and arguments in there that try and tell you, compel you to understand that God expects unity. You know, he didn't set up silos of different people that were believing different things. He wants, there's one Lord, one faith, one baptism. And that's the message we have to carry. We have to be that guiding light that brings that and provides the warning that goes along with it. What happens in the morning? I say this tongue-in-cheek because this doesn't apply to me, it doesn't apply to her, and it probably doesn't apply to a lot of people, but what happens in the morning when the sun comes up and you're asleep? Does that usually wake you up?
Yeah.
A lot of people get awakened by light. You know, some people have to pull all the shades down, and it has to be really dark in order for them to sleep. But when the light comes up and you've had a good night's sleep, it helps you wake up. And that's one of the characteristics of light that we have to also try and do. We have to try and be that source that wakes up the world. It heals. Light heals. This is something that you've seen a little bit of it on TV. If you watch TV and you've seen commercials, there's that one with the guy's name's Chuck Willery. He's got that little device that you stick on your joints, Willow Curve, I think it is. It's got little blinking lights on it, and you put it over your shoulder, or your knee, or your foot, or I don't know where all you can put it on. And what it is it's basically infrared light that has these little lights that flash, and what it does is if you put a heating pad against your skin, it only heats the skin in a very tiny, minuscule level below the skin. But light can be used to heat further down in the tissue. And you may have seen now that they've started to use lasers to do those kinds of things. They're called cool lasers. meaning not that they're not hot, but they're cool enough that they can use them to heat tissue deep in your body. And they use it for in places where you may have problems, where if you could get the blood circulation flowing, it would help bring the nutrients and the various things that you need to be healed there. So light has the ability to be able to heal. They've looked at folks, just based on the vitamin D argument, they've done studies that showed people who break bones and they're stuck in hospital rooms, they don't heal, their bones don't heal as fast as people who have broken bones who go outside. Why would that be? Because my body's going, I need calcium. And you can't have calcium in your body unless you have vitamin D. And you put them in the sunlight and your body goes, I need vitamin D, and you're not eating enough, so it starts cranking up, and it's a healing process that occurs. So it heals. But we, as Christians, need to be that kind of person that provides healing comfort to people in the world. In 1 Thessalonians 5, 14 and 15, now exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, uphold the weak, be patient to all. So we're supposed to comfort folks. A lot of times we're not involved enough in people's lives to know that there's a problem going on. And that's kind of why I'm encouraging you, when you talk to somebody, if you use their name, they're more inclined to talk to you, and it gives you extra opportunities to talk about other things, and eventually you can have discussions that lead in different directions, of which some of that direction for us as Christians needs to be about God. Light makes itself visible. This one, you know, some of these I got out of a book by Wendell Winkler, and some of them he put in there, and I was scratching my head trying to figure out, what was he talking about? This one makes some sense to me. It makes itself visible. The idea is that he's trying to drive home, I believe, is what happens to the world if all I ever do is talk about stuff? Not much, other than at some point people get tired of listening to you. What happens to the world when I start doing things? There's a difference between saying stuff and doing stuff. Just like in James, where it talks about not to be just a hearer of the word, but a doer of the word. You know, you can't get past the argument that God expects us to take action and to do things. You can't be pleasing to God. And I know we convince ourselves that we're pretty comfortable sitting in the seat, and we come in here and we do what we do, but we're not real comfortable doing some of the other things that we ought to do, and that's some of the things that we need to be looking at and being concerned about. Light does not burn in of itself. It's the whole idea. This is where I had a little problem with the author. There are a few sources of light that are light all the time. The sun. We don't turn the sun on and off, do we? I mean, it's on. It's on now. Why can't we see it? It's on the other side of the earth. That's why we can't see it. We can't turn it. Well, if the moon's out, we can see some of it because it reflects off the moon, and we see the moon, so we see that reflection. But you ever walked into a room? I mean, you have to be careful what you say sometimes, because technology is like right behind you when you say you can't do something, because right now, today, when you walk in a room, you don't walk in a room and the light comes on, does it? Unless you're at my front door, you can walk up to my front door. It's got a motion sensor and the light comes on. But generally speaking, when you walk in a room, what do you have to do to get the light come on?
Hit the switch.
You have to hit the switch. Day's coming when you're going to pull out your little phone, and all your little lamps are going to have these little devices in it, and you're going to be able to turn on and off everything in your house from your phone or whatever device it is. And it'll be nice when you're laying in bed when you can do that, but I'm not sure how it helps. But the idea here is that in order for you and I as Christians to do things, we have to turn ourselves on. As the light of the world, you have to want to do it. You have to turn that switch on. And you're the one who decides whether the switch is on or the switch is off. Here's one. This is one of my favorites. I even brought something to illustrate it. Light can be painful. If you don't believe light can be painful, you need to come to my house when my wife gets up in the morning and goes in the bathroom. We redid our bathroom a couple years ago, and we took out the lights that were in there, and we put in these LED spots, and they're on a rheostat, and they can go very low or very high. When she goes in to the bathroom to get ready to go to work, if I go in there, I got to do this. Because there's enough light in that bathroom to land a 747.
I like the light.
She likes the light. Man, there is enough light in my bathroom, it probably could light up all of South Florida. But it can be painful. I mean, have you ever had somebody, have you ever been in complete darkness and then somebody either opens a door and there's bright sunlight comes out, or you walk into a building and you've been outside and you go inside and then you can't see anything when you walk in? You know, light can be painful. Well, it can not only be painful to you because you're on the receiving end. If you think about the metaphor in terms of light, and you're supposed to be the light, sometimes the things that the light has to present can be painful for other people. Think about Stephen in Acts chapter 7. Here's Stephen, and what happens to him? He says to them, "You stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, you always resist the Holy Spirit as your fathers did." And they really took that to heart. They really enjoyed that, didn't they? What did they do to Stephen? They ran him out of the city. Once he was outside the city, they stoned him to death. Sometimes what you have to present to people, being the light of the world, is stuff that people don't want to hear. I'll give you an example. If you walk out the door and you go to a restaurant and you tell somebody you're a Christian, the likelihood that it's going to be receptive may or may not be, it's kind of whoever it is that you talk to. Might not be a problem. I stick you in an airplane. I fly you across the Atlantic, across the Mediterranean, land you in Syria. You walk out there and you go, "I'm a Christian." If you're a guy, they'll say to you, "Are you going to convert?" And if you say no, they'll cut off your head. They'll crucify you. They'll kill you on the spot. They've been doing it. They've killed hundreds of thousands of people. If you're a woman, they take you into slavery. That's what they do with women and children. That's what they're doing. We don't face that here. But remember what it said at the end of the Beatitudes? What did it talk about? About being persecuted. Sometimes when you're the light and you're delivering the message, it's not going. Sometimes that seed that you scatter falls on fertile ground. Sometimes it falls on stony ground. It's not going to necessarily receive the kind of welcome that you'd like it to hear. So sometimes there's going to be some pain involved in doing that if you're going to be the light of the world. But we need to just know that in advance before we do it. Light is pure. If you think about when you heat things up, you use different kinds of things to heat things up. An example would be I light a fire and I'm trying to purify something with it. Like if you heat up something and you put water, you're using water to purify something. After you purify the thing and you take it out of the water is now polluted. It has all the stuff that you're trying to get out of whatever it was you're trying to purify. If you're trying to purify metals and you use heat, you get dross, which is what you're trying to purify out of whatever metal you're working with. But light doesn't work that way. Light remains pure no matter what you use it for. When you use the light, light is light. And it doesn't become contaminated. It's pure. And we as Christians, we have to be pure of heart, just as it says in James 1:27, where it says, "If anyone among you thinks he's religious and does not bridle his tongue, but receiveth in his own heart his religion, pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit the orphans and the widows in their trouble, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. I'm going to skip a couple here because the bell rang here, because I want to get to the middle part here. Light. And when you look at the middle verse that we were looking at in Matthew, where it says, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all the house. What are reasons why, if you're a Christian and you're supposed to be the light of the world, what are some of the reasons that people talk about for why they're, quote-unquote, hiding the light? Fear? Okay, they're afraid. You know, when you do these things, you don't know what's going to happen sometimes, and you're afraid. What else? Some people are apathetic. Some people are hypocritical. And some people, when you first become a Christian and there's this much to know and you know this much, it's hard to be that light when you only know a very little bit. And that's why it's important when it's important to us to know that we need to work with young Christians to help them increase their knowledge so they can function as that light. The last verse that we were looking at, letting your light shine before men that they may see your good works, glorify your Father in heaven. It's real simple here. It's all about, not my words, God's words. It says right here, let your light shine before men. So in other words, we can't hide. You have to do this in front of other people. You can't hide behind the tree. You can't avoid people. God expects us to shine before other men, that they may see your good works. What's works? It's doing stuff. It's action. It's not sitting there and thinking about doing it. It's actually doing it. He expects us to go out and take action and do things. And when we do this, a lot of times when we do this, there's this temptation to want to go, is it all about the work or is it about the worker? Some people get lost in doing the work because they're sapping in the glory of, I'm doing this and this is really making me look good. Well, it's not about you. Because at the end here it says what? Who are you supposed to glorify with these works?
God.
God. That's what it's about. It's not about me. It's not about the worker. It's about glorifying God. So I want to give you your homework assignment because we're going to be out of time in just a second. It's different than it was before. Doesn't require you to speak to anybody with your mouth. You need to get 3 3x5 cards. Or it can be a postcard or whatever. It can be a slip of paper. It can be whatever you want. It's not about what you're doing it. Now, all you people that are millennials, I know this is going to kill you. I want you to get a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen. I don't want you to send a text, an email, a Twitter, or whatever else you can send on a phone. Facebook, none of that. Piece of paper, pen or a pencil, and you're going to handwrite some kind of brief note to somebody. And I'm going to give you three categories of people. Write one to a family member or a close friend, one to a neighbor or a casual acquaintance, and one to a stranger. And all you're going to do is you're going to just brighten their day. You're just going to say something to them that is going to kind of come out of left field, something that they're not going to expect. It doesn't take more than probably a minute to write each note. I'm not looking, you know, you're not writing Shakespeare here. You're not writing prose. Just a nice little thought for somebody and give it to them. And when I say a stranger, I mean somebody. I'm not saying you walk down the street and grab a guy and go, here's a note. I'm thinking more along the lines of you go to a restaurant and the person who waits on you, you know, you leave them. At the end, they bring you the thing that you put the tip in and the bill. Just leave a little handwritten note in there that says, gee, thank you very much for service you gave me. That really appreciated what you did. You could do that too. That would be somebody who you potentially don't know. But I'm looking for something very short, brief. We're going to do that and see what kind of reaction you get. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.